What if you were born with a disease that you always knew would kill you? And then what if all of a sudden you were given a second chance? Well, that's exactly what happened to me. And it's the question that we explore on the new podcast series, Breathless, from Snack Labs. Join me, Jeremy Saunders, for a series that explores what it means to live and die, to love and to lose, and what it's like to have your whole life turned upside down and the unexpected challenges that come with a life-saving drug. You can listen to Breathless now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, baby.
Hello, my love.
Ready for a new week of podcasting with a brand new, brand spanking new Termion podcast brand.
I love it. I'm really excited. It's been in the works for a long time. And if you haven't seen it yet, then you can head on over to, patreon.com/termion and see our sort of new colors and image there. You can see it on Instagram. You can see it on our website, termionpodcast.com.
You can probably fucking see it right now if you look at your phone or whatever you're listening to this on.
It's us.
It's our faces. We moved away from the old finger banging image of P and the V, or it could be a B as well.
I guess it. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of how I was justifying it to myself when I sort of noticed that it was out of date for sort of the range of topics that we talk about. Mm-hmm. The old school P and V finger in the, but I was like, it could be a butthole. And here's actually that brings.
I stick my finger in buttholes a lot, so it definitely could be a butthole.
But then you'd have to be not so much fingertip to thumb tip. You'd have to sort of cinnamon bun your fingers in a circle.
Create an
really
anus.
Tight.
Yeah, tight.
But.
Anus. We've been kind of talking about it, at least for a little bit, where, you know, the podcast is now, I think it's like over four years old.
Yeah.
You know, we've been around since... Valentine's Day 4 years ago, I think is when we started. And things have evolved. Things have sort of changed a little bit. Like when we first started, you know, a lot of our episodes were like, tell us what you're shoving in your asshole. Like, you know, just wild. Like, I just wanted to know what's the wild sex that people are having. But now it really has evolved more into like, we still get some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more like, Tell us how you're taking care of yourself, you know, like that sort of shit. So it's, you know, with the evolution of the podcast sort of
migrating away from sensationalized, sexualized stuff and more towards, I don't fucking know. Food for thought, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about this in my walk here, thinking about how, you know, a couple of the conversations we've had lately have really touched on mental health, particularly one which I think will come out next week. But talking about like the DSM, so the, like the diagnostic manual of like psychological mental illness and seeing how many sex related things are in there.
Yeah. That, yeah. I mean, so again, this is a next week's episode with Laura Zam, but we did talk about that. And that was actually something that I didn't quite know until we were talking to her.
Yeah. Me neither. But it really made me think about mental health as, and sex more than ever, how they play into each other, because, you know, with being sick the last couple months and just like really dealing with some like, you know, low emotional stuff. And then having that conversation, which again will come out next week with Laura Zam, I think I started to see that perhaps more than I was willing to recognize before, or more than it like I felt like I could justify before, that I may have been existing my entire life with like some low level anxiety and depression that may have played into
your libido,
who I am as like a sexual being. Because, you know, as much as we've been having these conversations and like we're pretty frank about our own experiences, like the truth is that I don't really consider myself to be sexually empowered, and I don't really feel like I have a handle on a healthy sex life for me.
Right.
And I can, it's sort of almost like buried underneath all of this work that we do to put out this podcast and all these conversations to put out there, because it's in my life a lot more than like the average person with research and talking and all that kind of stuff. But the amount of sex that I have in my life is still, I don't think sufficient, and in masturbation as well. Like just that, those practices as an overwhelming service to like mental health, it's almost overwhelming when I think of like, oh, now I got to fucking take care of that thing. Like it's just another ball in the air that I've got to keep up there.
So what you're saying is you talk the talk, but you don't walk the walk.
I don't think I do.
Right. Okay.
But I mean,
when you were just saying there about that, you feel like having low underlying sort of anxiety has prevented you from being your like fullest, most authentic sexual self. Mm-hmm. Do you mean that your libido has takes a toll, or do you mean in a more grander scale of like you don't even know. Like you don't have a very good grasp on like who you are as a sexual being. Well, is that what you mean?
No, I mean, like, that's a really good question, because like I think there's so many layers, and like, well, like this podcast has evolved. We both we evolve who we are sexually, and I've had some really empowering sexual experiences, and have felt really empowered lots of times. But where the word that trips me up all the time is libido. Like, I don't even really fucking know what that means, because I have no trouble. So, you know, I kind of looked into a little bit to the DSM and like what female like arousal disorder would be. And it has a whole bunch of criteria, which we'll get into next week. But I looked at that and I was like, yeah, I don't think I have like a mental illness that's specifically fucking me up sexually, but with like a low level of anxiety or depression there, it's just like, whether it's meditating or whether it's masturbating, there's an effort that has to be made to like take care of yourself in that way. You have to make the effort to sit on your meditation cushion, or you have to make the effort to
sit on your dildo.
Exactly. And I have one sex toy in my life. It's currently out of batteries, but,
Batteries? What the fucking sex toys are you using? Batteries?
It's a vibrator.
It's 2021.
What am I supposed to do?
Well,
it has to, I'm not going to plug it into the wall necessarily.
I know that's, you what can. Most,
no,
are you
on
like,
old school?
are we talking like AAA batteries?
Yes. What? Why is that so weird to you?
I think that's an obsolete, look, I could be wrong. I could be fucking totally wrong.
Most vibrators don't plug into the wall.
I think they do.
Some of them do.
No, I think they do now. I'm sorry. No. You bought an old ass dildo.
No, it is old.
Was it used? Where did you get this? Was it wish.com? Where are you getting your sex toys?
I honestly don't remember when I bought this sex toy. It was
a long time ago.
I've had it probably at least a decade.
Yeah, dude. You know why? Because it takes batteries. Jesus Christ.
I didn't realize that was
That's so old school. Thing.
I know.
Sex toys now are like you plop it on one of those fucking things you get from IKEA that charge your phone on a desk. You know, you just lay it on a thing, on a base, and it charges your shit.
You know, solar charged.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I didn't know that, but
interesting.
Masturbation month is coming up. Masturbation month is in May.
When is that? Oh, it's May.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Does that just mean it's just like go fucking hog wild and masturbate?
I think it can be whatever you want.
As much as you want. I feel like our guest that we are going to throw to later this episode, Megan Stubbs, who specializes, I guess one could say, in living the single life.
Yeah.
I don't want you to take that the wrong way. She'll go into that a little bit more, but she would probably have a whole hell of a lot to say for what one could and might want to do during masturbation month.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great thought. So she wrote a book all about what it is to be single and fabulous. Let me just grab the name of it here. But I want to actually, Jeremy, since you do all the medical stuff over in your other podcast, what do the acronyms after her name mean? EDD and ACS. You know what those mean?
EDD is educated damsel.
Uh-huh. That sounds about right.
She's an educated damsel. And then what was the other one?
The other one is ACS.
And is there one capitalized over the others?
All three ACS are capitalized. What do they call that?
Post-nominals.
Post-nominals.
ACS, accredited.
Australian Computer Society.
Yeah, right.
No, it's not that.
I was going to say accredited... cunt specialist.
Ooh.
But I feel like that rubs some people the wrong way.
Well, it doesn't rub me the wrong way. I can't find the answers to that, but Megan,
we'll get a fucking email. Don't you worry.
Hopefully educate us. She's a sex and relationship columnist as well for Playboy. I didn't know that. We didn't get into that.
Do you follow her on Instagram? I started following her on Instagram. It's a fucking riot.
She's great.
Yeah. Megan Stubbs. Check her out on Instagram. It's great.
Yeah. And her book is called Playing Without a Partner. Mm-hmm. And basically, I love, it hasn't come out yet. It comes out on May 11th, which is great for Masturbation Month.
Oh, great.
You can add it to your
the book, yeah,
your
the
list.
Book. The Request. Episode comes out today.
Oh, yeah. But she also has a link in her link tree off of Instagram for sex toys.
Oh, cool.
So she's got a partnership with vibrators.com.
Nice. And how many of those toys take AAA batteries?
Well, I wish we had had this conversation before we talked to her so I could ask her about
I could be wrong, but I feel like that's kind of a sort of out of date thing.
I mean,
I feel like
batteries
in general are kind of becoming obsolete. You know, like everything is rechargeable. And it should be that way. I feel like batteries are a big waste.
Yeah, they're a huge waste. They're super bad. But I'm looking at all of these images of vibrators and I see no cords. So I think we're just going to
Well, they're
have
not going to show you the cords. I don't mean like they're not the cords come like I just bought a wand recently.
Okay.
And it's a cordless rechargeable wand. So when it runs out of batteries, you take out basically the exact same charger as your phone.
Yeah.
Plug that into it, plug that fucker into the wall and let it charge for an hour.
All right. What toys do you have that you use for masturbation?
No, I've never actually used a toy for masturbation for myself. I say that with a caveat in that I have used things. There was a thing that I think I've talked about this on the show, but there was a thing that I had to use for my lungs. It's called a percussor. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that because people with CF have a lot of mucus in their lungs, physiotherapy, aka like banging on your chest, is one of the treatments that they commonly use for people with CF. And so they've made a machine that does that essentially for you. And it's this little cup on the end of this like big black sort of, it looks like a fucking vibe. It looks like a sex toy. I mean,
it does, but it has like a jock looking, like a jock cup.
Yeah. Not even a jock cup. It's like a suction. It looks like a miniature plumber.
Okay.
Or a plunger.
Right.
So like a little suction cup. And it goes. So you can change how fast it goes. I used to take that and just ram it against the head of my dick when I was a kid and be like, wow, 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 wowie.
If you want to see what that looks like.
Wowie.
You can head on over to patreon.com/charmian.
So, but other than that, I've never had like a fleshlight. I would love to try one, you know, so we've, this is not a paid advertisement. However, we have run ads for Intamo Pleasurables, and through that, I've just fallen in love with them as a company. They have a wonderful little boutique over on the West Coast, and they make lube, and their lube's my favorite lube right now.
Their lube is really nice. They also have it's like a lube, but it's specifically for premenstrual like cramping and stuff. Oh, so you just, like rub it on your belly before. Like the week leading up to your period.
Sure. So their Instagram, Intamo Pleasurables Boutique, I think on Instagram, they will like feature toys in stories every once in a while. And they've been like showing these toys for people with penises. And they're kind of like fleshlights, I guess. I guess it would be considered a fleshlight. I don't even know if that's still what the term is, but, there's like these crazy, almost like H.G. Geiger-esque pieces of art where they're like these weird, it's this tunnel with like this crazy intricate, like nipples and little like fingery things inside. And so they fill it with lube and they'll stick their hand in it and fuck their hand to just show you how it works. And I'm going, I got to try that. Like that looks... But it's kind of like, it sort of reminds me of like, the first time I ever had sex on MDMA, mm-hmm. where I was a little scared to do it. Cause I was like, what if I fucking ruin sex forever?
Right. You thought it might be so good.
If it's so ecstatic that sex will never be as good. Obviously that's not the truth. However, it is amazing. Like having sex on drugs is amazing. It's unlike anything. But it doesn't take away from how good sex can be. So okay. I know that this sex toy thing probably isn't that. Although there is a small part of me that's like, what if I fuck this little sleeve thing? And I'm like, goodbye, other bodies.
Right.
I don't need anyone.
I had to look up that artist. It's H.R. Geiger.
H.R. Geiger. Sorry. Yeah. And, what did I say?
H.G.
Oh, sorry.
H.R.
Yeah.
Geiger. G-I-G-E-R. And whoa.
He's the artist behind Alien.
That is some wild looking art.
Yeah. Very, very sexualized.
Yeah.
Phallic.
It made me, while you were talking, because I was sort of like my brain divided and went over to like Google this artist. I was thinking about, I was imagining that you were talking about like some sort of thing that you would insert your penis into, but then you could also insert it into a vagina or butthole from there. And it would there would be like the penis, but then there would also be other tentacles, like you're like suctioning like an octopus onto a partner's like back end.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
That sounds kind of cool, huh? I think I just invented a sex toy.
For anyone who is watching this episode or wants to watch the foreplay episodes, you can do that on patreon.com/charmian. But I'm just going to throw here to some H.G. Geiger. Sense. You can see.
Yeah, look at the.
Isn't that fucking wild? Look at that. I mean, this is like. It's intense. Intense art. Intense. Just Google it real quick and look at what you see. And it's like a lot of really. It's spooky stuff. Very spooky. And it's just.
Dark.
Like dark and weird. Yeah, I like it.
Very cool.
Anyway, was there other stuff you wanted to
I thought,
chat about, right?
I sort of had asked Megan in the episode if she knew much about like the history of like the spinster myth. And
so just help me out here. The spinster, is the spinster like the is that like the archetype of like the person, namely in the times, like the woman who just couldn't
or just didn't
find a mate or just didn't want to like,
I think it umbrellas all of those things. So it was just used to describe, a single woman who was old enough to get married and didn't.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And it definitely, like, the word spinster has it's definitely old fashioned. I think it's now considered sort of a derogatory term.
Oh, if I called someone a spinster, I'd get canceled.
Well, you know what? I don't know, because when you put it like it's when you name it as an archetype,
right?
I think it can be a really useful kind of word empowering and tool. Right. Yeah.
But what if I was like, you're a fucking spinster?
Well, yeah, you shouldn't say anything to anyone like that unless you want to make them feel like shit.
Yeah, right.
That's just seems mean.
Totally. 100%.
So when spinster first entered English in the mid 1300s, it referred to a woman who spun thread and yarn. So they were often like lower class women who had to work low class jobs.
It makes me think of Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, yeah. Why?
Because isn't that whole story about like there's this woman who's like spinning gold yarn or something, or like she's like spinning yarn, and he's like, if you say my I forget what it's like, if you say my name, I'll let you about like I'll you can be my wife. I don't fucking remember.
We'll have to look this up, but that's a really creepy old story.
Yeah.
I would love to actually dig that back up and brush it off and look at it, but yeah, there was something with him. With him, where she had to give him her child,
something
her
like
firstborn
that.
Child,
yeah,
something like that.
He was like, "If you can't weave this room full of gold yarn, I will steal your baby," or something like that. I'm a spinster. I got this shit.
No, I think he granted her wishes or something. I think she got wishes.
Hey, Taylor, what's this Rumpelstiltskin? What was that story all about? Yeah, yeah, Trey. Yeah. He's like, you got to be in this room and sew me golden.
All right.
Yarn.
Well, sounds like a.
There was something about stealing a baby, though.
No,
and he was like a
troll.
He was like
or
a dwarf. Yeah, he was like he had dwarfism or something.
Yeah, he was definitely not a human.
Or
he
leprechaun.
Wasn't a human.
I mean, I picture him as a leprechaun, but a nasty leprechaun, like the movie.
You know what? I bet if
H.R.
Geiger drew him, it would be the fucking scariest Rumpelstiltskin you've ever seen. But I wanted to also, because we love words so much, I wanted to just unpack the word spinster a little bit more.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So a woman who spins or whose occupation is to spin, and by law, an unmarried or single woman. By the 1800s, the term had evolved to include women who chose not to marry. And it didn't include, let's say, widows.
That's a different category.
That's definitely a different category. Now I wanted to give you a few synonyms just in case you want to mix up your vocabulary when you're calling someone a fucking spinster.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah,
right. Okay, so thesaurus.com gives us a bachelor girl.
You fucking bachelor girl.
And you know what? That's funny because bachelor is like the male equivalent.
Bachelor girl? Isn't it bachelorette?
Well, I don't know, because bachelorette almost seems...
That's what the show is.
I know, but bachelorette, they're getting paired off.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right.
And the only word for the male version of spinster is bachelor, and it's like,
this is too binary.
Yeah. Okay. Fuddy duddy.
Fucking fuddy duddy. Yo, that's my new word. Fuddy duddy. You are such a fucking fuddy duddy.
Yeah.
I am now. Anytime I'm going to get angry behind the wheel,
Yeah.
Oh, you fuddy-duddy. Cutting me off.
Yeah. Are you calling them a spinster or are you just calling them a fuddy-duddy?
I'm just calling them a fuddy-duddy.
It implies negative qualities such as being fussy or undesirable.
Fuddy-duddy feels so good in my mouth.
Okay,
that might be my new favorite word, fuddy-duddy.
You've never heard that before?
No, I didn't even know that was a word.
What?
Fuddy-duddy?
Okay.
You just made that up.
No, it's here on thesaurus.com. Somebody else made it up.
Fuddy-duddy.
There's more here. You're going to like this.
Oh my God.
So goody-goody.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
That's interesting. That doesn't compute with me.
Well, there might be like an aspect of the spinster thing where it's
she
like
isn't put out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The opposite of a loose woman.
Yeah.
Right.
Lone
slut.
I really like the word
slut.
I don't know who calls a slut slut, but I really love it.
You sluty fatty daddy.
Lone woman.
Lone woman. I like that. Yeah.
Maiden. Again, that's a whole other archetype.
Right.
Prig.
A prig. That does not say. You call someone a prig.
Yeah, is that
and
not?
They don't even know what you're saying to them, they're still going to be offended.
They're going to be 100%.
A prig. Get out of here, you prig.
Yeah. Here's another old school one. Here's an old school one.
Great.
Catherinette.
Oh, that's, geez.
Okay.
Unfortunate for all Catherines.
Catherinettes was a traditional French label for women of 25 years old who were still unmarried by the Feast of St. Catherine on the 25th of November.
Okay.
A special celebration was offered to them on this day and everyone wished them a swift end to their single status.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. Then we have medieval single women. Which again,
wait, that's just one of the words.
Yeah.
Spinster, medieval single woman. All my medieval single women, all my medieval single women, all my fuddy daddies, all my fuddy daddies.
Okay.
I'll put your hands up.
Okay. Here's one that actually, so I clicked on this. It was the Wikipedia heading for this was she never married.
Yeah.
But it redirected to he never married. So I'm going to read this because I found it really interesting. He never married was a phrase commonly used by obituary writers in the United Kingdom as a euphemism for the deceased having been homosexual.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Interesting, huh?
So if you read an obituary and it was like, and Thomas Middleditch, he never married.
Everyone's like, he was
a gay.
Yeah. A similar phrase used.
Now, well, I guess you probably wouldn't know this. Are they making assumptions? Are they going, well, Thomas never actually married. So
probably.
He was probably fucking gay. Put down that he never married.
Yeah, I would say probably. You could also say it was a confirmed bachelor.
That was another way of saying that he's gay?
Yeah.
A confirmed bachelor.
Yeah. And I don't know why.
Humans are so fucking weird.
It must have been used similarly for the she never married, because she never married doesn't have its own Wikipedia thing. It just redirects to he never married. But anyway, here's another one.
That just goes to show how much science doesn't care about women. They don't want to give you the Wikipedia page for she never married.
Maybe I'll have to write it. Okay. here's this one's Chinese. Sheng Nu, which means leftover women or leftover ladies.
Sheng Nu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has been also used colloquially to refer to women in India, North America, and other parts of Asia.
Hmm. Leftover women.
Yeah.
Huh.
What do you think about that?
Like, what does that mean? Leftover, like...
Like they didn't get paired up. They're
in the leftover pile.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a... I hope no one ever gets called Sheng Nu.
No.
That hurts my heart.
Yeah. Anyway, that's basically all I could find.
Well, if any of that made you bummed out, if you're listening to this and you are like, well, I'm a fucking Sheng Nu. I'm a fuddy duddy. I'm a confirmed bachelor. If you're feeling like, fuck, I'm single and that doesn't make me feel good to hear these derogatory, shitty words, I'm telling you right now, this conversation with Megan Stubbs will pick you up and make you feel like Beyonce when she kicked through the fucking doors and won a Grammy for that song, all the single. I don't know if she won a Grammy for that song, but she just swept the Grammys. So yeah, she did. So this episode is for all my single people
and all of our couple people. Because
and all a couple people.
I took a lot away from this conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Especially for sure. Just about like being an autonomous human being and like happy and in love with my own life. And
not settling.
Yeah.
That's another good one there. Yeah.
And also the reminder that one thing that I think I've read that single people want, that married people or coupled people, a trap that they fall into is like, it reduces their social circle because suddenly they're sort of like, it's less intentional. You don't have to make plans with, you just kind of always have someone there to hang out with.
Yeah.
So the idea, like I've really taken that home and thought about it since we chatted with Megan, because the idea of just like, oh, wait a second, like my life, my friends, like my circle, it's all really important to how I show up in the world and then how I show up in my partnership second, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we all know those people in our lives where it's like they got into a relationship and you sort of never really heard from them again.
Yeah.
You know, they sort of like drifted away.
They come up out of they've been submerged in like child rearing and then suddenly you're like, oh my God, we fell away from one another.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, is there anything else you wanted to hit before we throw to this conversation with Megan Stubbs?
No, I think that's it for this week.
Then folks, that is it for this week. We hope you enjoyed our little intro there. And hey, if you like these foreplay segments and you want to watch the silliness, and the seriousness, you can go to patreon.com/termion, where we are publishing all of our foreplay segments on video. And to all of our patrons who have been, helping us and supporting us through the years, through these 4 years of where we've been here and through this evolution, we thank you. There's some changes coming up to the podcast and, you know, I think for the better, and we're glad to have you along this journey with us. So thank you for everything that you've done so far.
Yeah, it means a lot. Thank you so much.
That leads us to throwing to our conversation with none other than Megan Stubbs, the woman who is all about being single and making it
awesome.
So we hope you enjoy this conversation with Megan Stubbs.
We've been really looking forward to chatting with you since I heard about your book, which is called Playing Without a Partner, A Single's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Happiness. And I'm just going to be totally forthcoming here and say that we recorded last week with someone on the subject of fantasies. And I'm going to tie that in with our conversation today, because in my dark moments in relationships, I fantasize about being single. And it's not about like going out there and getting all the sex. It's just like
having time like, to do what
it
you
seems
want.
Like no, nobody tell me what to do. And so I'm really looking forward to having this conversation. I was just kind of catching the end of a podcast that you were speaking on before, and it's a much broader umbrella, the single life, than I think I previously would have thought. So would you be willing to tell our listeners who you are and how you identify as a single person, and a little bit about what brought you to write this book?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Dr. Megan Stubbs. I'm a sexologist. That's the job you didn't see on Career Day. I've been hashtag super single for a long time. And it was kind of just like, I don't know, destiny to write this book, because the publisher was looking for a book on this topic. And I was like, go on. This is my life. Like,
I know, all about it. Yeah.
I'm like the expert you needed. So it's a fun combination of my own personal life with my professional life, all mixed into one cohesive book for people to read and enjoy, whether they are single or partnered too. I think there's a lot of valuable information in there that can be taken away if you are in a partnered relationship, but just really about just building up yourself and feeling good about the situation that you're in.
Because
go ahead, Brad.
But at the end of the day, we're all kind of single people trying to make it work with other people.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, you close your eyes. It's just you. Even if you're laying next to someone, like, you have to be happy with your situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm dying to know, you know, was this a, I feel like this book probably would be pretty valuable for anyone at any point in their life. But currently where we are in this state of the world, I feel like this book is kind of coming to folks at a really like opportune time, because we, you know, it's one thing to be single and to navigate that lifestyle during regular times, but then I feel like it's a whole other fucking ball game to navigate that lifestyle during a global pandemic. How do you feel like
is this incredible timing
before we ended up where we are here today?
Oh no. It was written during the pandemic.
Whoa, no shit. Okay.
Yeah, You're one of those people who wrote a book during the pandemic.
I don't recommend doing that.
No, I bet not. But, how much did the current state that we find ourselves in play a role within the narrative of the book itself? Like did you feel like the pandemic was kind of having an effect on, let me rephrase that. Do you think the book would have been much different if you had written it in pre-pandemic times?
No, I don't think it'd be vastly different. Because I was writing it during the pandemic, I was still writing it from a point of view of like what normative life would be like. But as the year went on, we were able to add in not fun facts, but facts about the pandemic and how it's impacting people. Mm. And to put that into the book to give, I guess, perspective and comparison, because this book is still coming out during the global pandemic. So the information is still applicable to pandemic times and in non-pandemic times.
One of the questions, this is just going to take us back in time, even pre-pandemic. One of the questions we like to ask our guests, like right off the top, is basically what your origin story is in terms of, like you said, sexologist doesn't, it's not there on career day. So what was it like for you growing up, sort of discovering sexuality and ultimately choosing this as a field that you'd like to go into?
For sure. Yeah. I was always that friend you'd go to ask about sex stuff or sex advice, relationship advice. I was a voracious reader and still am. I'm like, I'm in my office in front of all my books right now.
They're color coded. I love it.
Yes. I did the rainbow thing. And I was just always just thirsting for that knowledge because, you know, changing bodies and like, you know, feelings and talking with my girlfriends about boys and stuff. It was just like, we're not having these conversations in school. So it's like, we got to go, you know, forge our own trail here. So growing up, that was me. I was that friend. And we get into high school. And, you know, we're starting to expand more into like, you know, manual sex and oral sex and talking about things like blowjobbing. And so having those discussions with friends, the, you know, knowledge just kept growing and growing. And at that time, it was like, you know, you're going to college, you know, what are you gonna do for a real job? And it was like, I'm super good at science. So let's go to school to be a medical doctor. So I went to undergrad and got a I went to undergrad and then I had a biology degree path with a pre-med emphasis. And that was going great until I started taking chemistry classes, and chemistry and I did not mix. It was not a great time. And that was when I actually failed my first class ever. And I was like, oh my God, this is a wake up call. Like, I can't be a medical doctor. I'm sure I could have slogged through and done the required chemistry classes, but it was like sucking my soul. And I was just like, this doesn't feel right. So I was actually reading a Cosmo and I saw the word sexologist just randomly one day. And it wasn't until I was like, sexologist, is that even a real job? Cause like, I'd never seen, I mean, I'd probably seen the word before, but I'd never thought about like biologist, sexologist, huh? And so I Googled on my dial-up back then to see, like, is that like a job you can do?
Is this acceptable?
Yeah, is this a thing? And I found one of the few graduate schools in the country at the time that offered graduate degrees in human sexuality. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is my destiny, even more so than being like a medical doctor. So after graduating with my undergrad degree in biology, I went out to California and got my doctorate in human sexuality. And I was like, this is like the perfect fit. Like, this is me. Like, this is ultimately like my destiny.
The perfect fit. That's a really good way to put it, given some of the conversation I was hearing about not settling, which I'd like to get to a little bit later. So did your friends or your family have anything to say about you going off to be a sexologist?
They were like, this fits. This tracks.
It made sense.
Yeah, it made sense, you know. So I was able to, you know, combine my own anecdotal experiences and stories and then get the like educational perspective and like, oh, that's why, or like, oh, that's what's going on here. So I really value people who can share their own stories, because there's nothing like having your own experiences, but also to having the knowledge base to speak on these things. Cause I feel like during these pandemic times, everyone's become a coach and it's like, hold up.
Not
that you have to have graduate degrees or something in human sexuality, but you have to have done more work than I had a threesome once. So let me tell you all about how to have threesomes. Like, whoa, slow down. No, you don't.
Did you always identify as a super single, even all through those high school and college years?
You know, there were some false starts and, you know, there were relationships, of course, but for the last couple of years, it's been like super single.
Right on.
How much of your background as a sexologist has played into your own personal story of, you know, being for lack of a better term, like professional single person, you know, like I like to write a guide on how to like live your best life as a single person, a guide to sex, dating and happiness as a single person. Is the work that you had done as a sexologist, like, did that play a lot into your own personal life, or did you actually spend a lot of time like doing self work in terms of trying to figure out, you know, the best ways to live your life as a single person?
Yeah, I would say my background as a sexologist definitely has impacted my personal life, because I can't help but try and live out the teachings I learned and also now teach in my own life, because I don't want to settle. So I tell people don't settle and I'm over here not settling. And so it's just really like living, kind of like walking the walk. I do want to be in a relationship. I'm not trying to be single forever. It just happens to be the status of where I find myself right now. But it's definitely informed by my career, because I don't want to have people thinking that they have to settle, because you don't have to. You can have a very fulfilling life as a single person. You can have some of the best sex of your life as a single person. And that's what I teach and also try to implement in my own life. So it's always a reminder of like, you don't have to, you know, because other people are doing things on their own timeline, that doesn't mean that you're falling behind or that you should be hitting these milestones that your friends or, you know, colleagues might be hitting, because everyone's path is different.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the having a great sex life while single, because I know through talking to people on this show and just through talking to, you know, people within my own social circle, there seems to be this idea that typically sleeping with strangers typically leads to like more often than not poor sexual experiences. How do you go about coaching or teaching people how to have really satisfying sex with someone they may have just met and will likely never see again?
That's actually a chapter in the book.
Amazing.
Meeting people in the wild and having sex with strangers.
Yeah. How do you have good sex in the wild? That's what I want to know.
Everything that I teach, whether it is sex, relationships, body image stuff, it all boils down to some form of communication. So just because you are meeting someone in the wild and they're a stranger doesn't mean you can't have really awesome sex. So you really have to get specific on you know, your needs. You know, I love it when you blank my blank, or I love it when this is stimulated in this way, or I'm really into this. You have to be really vocal to communicate to your partner what works for you. And then also at the same time too, be an avid listener to what they're saying. And when they say, oh, I like this, or I love, you know, doing this because that makes me feel like this. And so just having that comfortable level of communication to have that give and take to realize, you know, we're not just going to be fumbling in the dark and trying moves we tried on our last partner because they liked it. That is a way to hook up with someone. But the better way is to really communicate and get specific on what you both want.
What if you're someone who, and I know this is probably a rather common sentiment. You're someone who like I feel like it probably stems from our very poor sex ed that exists in North America. But like, what if you're one of those folks who feels really shy about talking about the things that you derive pleasure from or that you like in bed? Like I know a lot of people have a hard time just talking about what they like with strangers, let alone even with themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So also in the book, I feel like I'm not trying to plug the book every single time. But
this is it. This is great.
A really great option is to fill out a yes, no, maybe list. You can Google that on Google and then find this list of a bunch of activities. And so you can sit down with yourself and fill this out and circle like kissing. Yes. I love that. Spanking. Maybe. Put a little question mark by that. And then like, flogging, no, circle that. I'm not into that. And then so have your partner fill out the same questionnaire and then come back together and then compare and say, oh, where do we overlap? Oh, you're curious about pegging? Me too. Let's see if we can explore this. Oh, we're both not into pearl necklaces? Great. I'll put that down.
Duly noted.
I love just showing up on a date with like your paperwork.
A binder, yeah. Like, yeah. Hey, please fill this out. Thank you.
Yeah. Slide it across the table.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to break the ice.
Yeah. If there's ever something you want to try or maybe introduce, I love saying, you know, hey, I heard a podcast or I read this article where they were talking about threesomes. You know, would you be into that? And that way you're not putting your partner on the spot to say, like, I'm into threesomes. How about you? And they're like, yeah, sure. Or they're like, no, I don't want to say no, but I'm not really into them, but I don't want to upset them. So just taking the pressure off of you and just saying, hey, I read about this. What do you think about it? You can probably get a more authentic answer from your partner.
Mm. Right. Like starting a conversation, a hypothetical sort of conversation. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Turn Me On podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So what does it mean, like in your writing, and I assume you have spoken to other people and gathered information from other people about what it means to be a single person. And it seems to me the statistics are showing that more people are choosing to be single than ever before. So I'm wondering what kind of stories you've heard or reasons you've heard that people might be sort of gravitating towards that as opposed to following the beaten path of like coupling up and, you know, going down that road.
Yeah, I think people just feel more empowered to like drive their own life. And so when in the past it was like, you know, get married, white picket fence, 2.5 kids, you know, they're breaking away from that narrative and saying, you know, what's going to work for me? So whether that's they want to pursue a career or they want to travel more or they haven't met the right person or they're just having fun, you know, with casual encounters. I just feel like people feel more empowered to say like, hey, I'm choosing this lifestyle and that's okay for me.
Does that trip, like, let's say when you go on dates with folks, do you get questioned a lot about your single status or your why you haven't partnered up long term?
Yeah, it usually does come up, that and just questions about my job,
which right. I hate,
but it does. And then so my answers are, I just haven't found the right person yet, and I'm not looking to settle. I have some, you know, things that I'm looking for and things that I'm not. And so with the current availability of where I live, it's just not worked out yet.
So on that note of settling then, this is a big question I've always had is like, especially in an age and a day where we are all feeling a little more empowered to be like, this works for me and this doesn't work for me. How do you differentiate between settling and having like unreasonable expectations?
Yeah. So there's always going to be compromise in a relationship. You're never going to have everything go your way 100% of the time. So I think it's important to really map out, maybe make a hierarchy of what's important to you. So for me, I don't want kids. That's a hard like line for me. Settling would be going with someone who wants to make babies with me. And that just sounds terrible to me right now. Mm-hmm. So for me, I can't do that. Like that's not going to work. If someone was a cat person, I'm a dog person, I could live with that. I'm not settling. I'm compromising. I'm saying, okay, we can let this mammal live in our house too. but I guess settling just makes me feel like you felt trapped. Like you had to say yes. Like what's the reason behind this? You know, are you like going against your own beliefs or the things that you want to have in your life? And you're just like, well, forget all that. I guess I will end up, you know, having kids and having 6 cats with a smoker who doesn't have a job and I make all the money and they drink all the time. You know, it's just, I was going down a hill of like, oh, this doesn't sound good at all. So there's always going to be compromise. So whether that is you being childless with a cat person with plenty of dogs too to balance it out, you know, there's going to be give and take for sure.
I just feel like it's something that I personally come up against with, especially with like feminism and, you know, questioning, you know, the way I was socialized to how much of a role does it play in what I'm willing to compromise. And like, you know, I'll find myself sometimes going down a road with a partner and we're going down the road and there's a future in view. And I look at the future and I go, I think I want that, but I could be wrong. I could just have a really like a partner who's really clear on what they want. And whereas I'm not sure. And that's when I start, you know, I think I'm just overshare here. I think I'm chronically, like I have a lot of self-doubt. I like to refer to it as a feeling is like going through life with my foot, like resting on the brake just in case we go too far in the wrong direction. And so sometimes when I'm analyzing like where I'm at in my partnerships, I'm like, how much of this is me just like drifting along for the ride? Because in a way I do want to be led. And where, like, how can I tell internally, like if I could really tune in, like whether this is right for me or what changes need to happen for this to fit for me. So in your book, do you talk about techniques for that kind of introspection?
No, but that's really good. we're mostly talking about how to be a single person, live your best life and be happy. At the very end, we do talk about meeting people in the wild and dating and having sex with strangers. But that's a really important point you bring up. I think it's really common to be wary when you're in new relationships to, you know, after the NRE wears off and you're like, whoa, like, you know, what does, you know, 8 moves down the road look like? Am I still going to be with this person? Those are really great questions to ask yourself. And then also reflect on, okay, why am I feeling like this? You know, am I worried that maybe, you know, 3 years down the road, there's going to be some big drastic change and I might be losing myself? So it's always great to check in with your relationships and, you know, see if you're both growing in the same direction. And the thing is, too, is that people do change. And so sometimes things end. And so we have to normalize that, too, because just because you dated for maybe 2 years and you ended it doesn't mean that the 2 years you were together were a failure. You know, it was just maybe at that point in time, you guys were aligned and that's great. And then you drifted apart and then, okay, it ended. It's like talking about your favorite TV show and then the series ends. You're like, oh, I can't watch Breaking Bad again. But you're like, it was still a good show, even though it was, you know, it ended. So you have to look back on it fondly and say, okay, well, that was a really good time, you know, on to the future.
And there's nothing worse than a TV show that goes far beyond the length of what it should go, you know, those TV shows that
ended.
Yeah, like Lost should have ended after season one, you know, like it shouldn't have gone 7 seasons. I relate relationships and pretty much everything in life to television shows, so that totally speaks to me. Do you think that there's, I mean, maybe this kind of plays into the whole like not having the ability to find compromise, but like, do you think that there's a possibility that some folks might that there's like a potential risk for almost becoming addicted to single life? And like, there's someone in, I can't say the name, but there's someone that I know.
You
in my own
friend.
Personal life, I have a friend who has been single forever. And every time they are seeing someone new, I always hear about it from them. And it's like this new amazing thing. And it's like, the way they talk, it's like, it sounds like, oh, this is the one forever, forever. And then, you know, like 2 months in, what happened to so-and-so? Yeah, it was just.
I have a friend like that too.
We might have the same friend.
It's not the same. Friend.
It's not okay. Okay. Nope. So part of me wonders, like, is this person setting themselves up for failure because they have this expectation that is just simply not possible to reach or attain, or are they just addicted to the
new relationship energy?
Yeah, whether it's new relationship energy or addicted to like the you know, there's something very sexy and attractive about the you know, the quality of being single, but also just having no one to, not having a boss, you know, like it's like being your, it's like being, that's not what I mean, but like being self-employed is kind of like, That's really attractive, really sexy, because you don't answer to anyone. You can kind of, it's on your own schedule. You're at your own whim to do whatever you please, whenever you please. Singlehood, I believe, is kind of similar to that, where it's like you're on your own. You can, if you want to, I mean, you can't really do this today, but if you want to pick up and fucking, you know, fly to another country for a couple of months just to explore, you can do that. There's no one to ask. There's no compromise to be made. So like, I don't know what my question is here. Aside from perhaps, like, do you think that there's a almost an addictive quality to being single for some people?
I don't know if I'd call it an addictive quality, but I would ask your friend who's like the serial, just like new dater, do they want to be in a relationship, or are they just having fun doing all these new relationships? Because you could, you know, they could say like, this could be the one. And if you want to get specific, be like, why didn't it work out? Like, what was the like no factor for you? And so if they can get clear on like, oh, they were talking about settling down, or, oh, they wanted to move and I don't want to move. And so, or if like they're worried about feeling trapped, like I don't want to have to give up my pickup soccer games, or I don't know, boys' night.
Sure. Yeah, right.
I want to be able to go to the strip club with my buddies. Okay. You know, so ask them, you know, what's first, do you want to be in a relationship? If they say they want to be in a relationship and they're constantly going through people, like, I don't know, samples at the grocery store, you know, ask them, like, what's going on here? Like, are you dating the wrong people? Are you just, you know, not being serious and being authentic and saying, I'm looking for a serious relationship? Or are you kind of just going in it to like this amorphous, like, oh, we'll see what happens. I always have so many questions.
Yeah, totally.
But I don't know if it'd be addictive. I think when we can get specific on, like, when you mentioned feeling trapped, like you can't just pick up and go somewhere without asking someone else. I feel like a lot of relationships have flexibility in letting their partners have autonomy to say, like, hey, I want to go out for, you know, a wine tasting weekend with my friends. Okay. See ya. So I have a lot of follow-up questions.
Autonomy is a great word. Cause I think, like, referencing what I was asking about earlier, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like I want to be autonomous and I want to be an independent person. And so I might be wary of, like, a ball and chain situation when it's not actually happening. It might be self-imposed because I haven't talked to my partner about whether that's like, I like to pick up and leave the province, at least, maybe not the country, whenever I want. This just occurred to me to ask, in your studies or in the writing of this book, did you research, do any research on like the history of like, what do they used to call ladies who had been like single spinsters? Yeah, yeah, exactly. The history of that and like the stereotype, the negative sort of stereotype that came with that.
Yeah, in the beginning we talk about the public perception of what it means to be single. Like, why aren't you desirable? Why aren't you settling down? What's wrong with you? So all those things, culture and society puts on the single person, and also the perceptions of people who are partnered and what they think of their single people in their lives. So yeah, we definitely do cover that. It's interesting. It's like, oh, it's either like they're having so much fun, or like, oh, I feel so bad for them. They go home alone all the time. It's like, yeah. And I have the whole bed to myself.
I would imagine that there's probably some undercurrent for some people who are partnered of jealousy of the single person as well. Like, but it comes out as a pity. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, people always think the grass is greener, but you never know someone's true situation unless you're like living in their shoes.
You have a question?
No, go for it, Brad.
I don't know if you can speak to this, but this isn't something that's come up in my psyche anyway for the last little bit. Is like, I don't want kids either, and I have at times felt that there is sort of an impenetrable wall that I can't quite see or name between myself and my female friends who are mothers, in that like it's a club I won't be a part of. And the language that they use to describe, you know, this love that they've never understood until they had kids is like, yeah, I feel like I'm on the outside sometimes looking at, and I'm quite happy, you know, I'd rather, you know, be quite confident in my decision than having children and regretting it, which I'm also seeing more and more headlines about. Which is cool that people are talking about, but can you speak to that dynamic at all? Cause I imagine there's some parallels between like single and coupled, but then there's also kids and no kids.
Yeah. I think, are you familiar with the word compersion?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think in this instance, you can have that feeling of compersion for your mother and friends. So I have friends who are popping out babies all over the place right now. And so I see that and I'm like, oh, my curiosity level has not reached the level where I'm like, maybe I should have a baby. I mean, I have a dog, and that's, I mean, I know I feel the love that they feel for their child.
Yeah, of course.
But I do realize I'm not going to be a member of that club because I'm not going to be a mom. So that's okay for my friends. And I'm very happy for them. I'm happy to see them take on this new role, and also keep their identities that they had before they became a mom. They're not just a mom now. They're still, you know, my amazing, awesome friends who do rock climbing and yoga and everything else. But I don't know that I'm feeling like less that I won't ever feel that experience because I'm happy for them. But I also know I feel that with my dog. Like I feel that with other relationships that I have. I'm like, wow, this is, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be like love is love, but like, this is a really strong love that I share with my, you know, my dog.
I feel that with my dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Three people who don't have kids, all of them going, I feel that for my dog too. And,
yeah.
And the amount of people out there listening right now that have kids going, you fuckers don't know. You fuckers don't know.
Until you're sitting with your dog post anesthesia while they're pooping because they can't even control their bowels, up all night with them, don't know where they are. Like, I don't want to hear that you don't know.
Yeah.
We know.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't diminish our, pet parenthood.
I think it's a good point too, because I have a massive family. I have a huge number of brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews. And when I think about having kids, and it almost seems to me like you go into a bit of a cocoon of just like raising your babies. Like you need to put that time in there. And that part of my brain goes, but I already don't have time to love the people in my life the way that I want to love them. Mm-hmm. And you know, working on lifestyle decisions and choices that will enable me to show up for those people in the way that I really want to. So I think that and compersion are very helpful. Compersion is a very helpful framing of that situation for me.
I'm curious to know your thoughts on, I feel like it's being single and really loving being single, living your best single life. That self-pleasure plays a really big role in that for maybe not for everyone, but I think for a lot of people, which is also something, again, just kind of linking back to the poor sexual education that we've all received. I think self-pleasure is one of those things that a lot of people also struggle with, or at least aren't so familiar with how to best, serve yourself, for lack of a better term. What do you have to say about that exploration and sort of learning and exploring the parts about yourself that feel good and how to pleasure yourself in a way that again, you're serving yourself in the best way possible?
For sure. I mean, pandemic time aside, it's so great because you are your own best lover. You're always with yourself. As I hold my hands up, it's free. It's ready to go right now. And it's one of the few sectors you can do that have no risk. And it's just great information. I would say time spent on yourself is never time wasted. So the more you get to explore yourself and discover what you specifically like, because we all know erogenous zones, we know nipples, clitoris, penis, all that stuff. But, maybe you're really into, soft neck caresses, or maybe you're into like whisper light touches on your belly or something. Like the more specific you can get on what really turns you on, you can both use that knowledge for yourself. And then if and when you decide to have a partner, you can tell them, hey, I like these light belly touches. And you can pass that on to them. But the more you know how to turn yourself on and love on yourself, the easier you can fall into that headspace of like arousal and feel good and sexual pleasure. You don't have to seek it outside of yourself, like in someone. So someone who feels like they have to go find someone at the bar or meet someone online and have a hookup session, maybe they're the people who are not having great satisfying sex because they're like, I don't really know what I want. Maybe this person I meet will know what to do to me. I hope, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's when you can go down that road of like not great sexual encounters. So the more specific you can get on what you like, the more you can turn yourself on and then spread that knowledge to others.
It's been a while since I've been single, but I have to say, after this conversation today, if for whatever reason I happen to become single in the near future, I feel a little less anxious about how that experience might feel or be. Just again, let our listeners know. So the book, it's Playing Without a Partner, A Single's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Happiness. It is coming out pretty soon, May 11th. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
May 11th.
How excited are you?
I'm so pumped.
Yeah. Megan, this has been really, really fun to sit down and chat with you and to kind of unpack what I'm sure is just the tip of the iceberg of what is to come with your book. And how can people follow you, follow what you're up to, and kind of stay up to date?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is like a great conversation. We can just keep going.
Absolutely.
Listeners can find me at sexologistmegan.com, and I'm sexologistmegan on all the handles.
Sweet. Amazing. Thank you so
and
much.
And you do coaching as well?
I don't do coaching. I do speaking. So I speak on college campuses, universities. I host private events for people in the lifestyle. So I teach actual like sex classes.
Amazing.
Well, I used to. Hopefully we'll pick that up again when we can touch each other in public.
Yeah, right. Amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been such a treat.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
All right, there you go, folks. That was our conversation with Megan Stubbs. What a lovely guest. And again, I highly recommend checking her out on social media, in particular Instagram, because it's the only place that I am really surfing these days and follow her there. And it's a hoot.
Right on. And get her book. It comes out. You can pre-order it through her Instagram. It's called Playing Without a Partner. It launches on May 11th. Give it a read and let us know how it changed your life.
Mm-hmm. And hey, folks, speaking of how it changed your life, if you want to let us know how we've changed your life, no, I'm just joking. If you want to reach out to us in any manner whatsoever, you can email us, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com.
There's also a submission form at turnmeonpodcast.com, our website.
Which we just overhauled with our new branding. I hope you enjoy it, folks.
I do.
I love it.
And also, if you want to head on over, if you've been listening for a while and on the fence about supporting us, be a producer of our podcast. And really, it's your dollars that make this happen. And you can add those post nominal letters to the end of your name, podcast producer, if you hit us up on patreon.com/turnmeon.
Yep. All right, folks, that is it for this week.
It sure is, baby.
Until next week.
We love you.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.